Welcome to Building 72, the podcast brought to you by the Entertainment Arts and Engineering Program at the University of Utah. Thank you for joining your hosts, Adam Hunter and Corinne Lewis, to talk about the video game industry and, you know, probably other stuff.
Hi, everybody. Welcome back to Building 72. I'm Corinne Lewis, and I'm here with my good friend, Adam Hunter.
Why, hello there.
And we are joined today with one of my favorite people. I think I always say that. Maybe that's just because I'm calling all the people that I really adore to be on the podcast.
We're going to have like a battle of the favorites, though, because you always say they're my favorite. So we're going to have to figure out who the most favorite is.
Well, Tony and I have known each other for a very long time, and I'm super excited to have him here. So this is Tony Rivard, everybody.
Hi, that's me. So I graduated MEAE at Utah. Cohort 4, where I worked on 404 site. I worked at EA for about 5 years, and now I am working at Sony Santa Monica, where I am a senior locomotion designer.
I just love that title. Like, I'm never going to get over that title. I don't know.
It's a really long, I need a really long business card that just like...
So let's dive right into that, because I remember when I very first heard your title, there were two main thoughts that came. Was one, trains and God of War confirmed, exactly like we were just talking about.
Yeah.
But two, and I was hoping you could expand this a little bit. When it comes to locomotion and like the movement of the characters and everything like that, is that something that is an ongoing process? Because half of my mind thinks like, okay, you do work for 6 months at the beginning of the project and then everything else is now built to that standard. So could you go into that a little bit?
Yeah, so from a locomotion standard, and this even happened whenever I worked on NBA Live, like a basketball game. I was also kind of working on locomotion near the tail end there. You get like this base set of animations in, right? You want to make sure the player, like, it feels comfortable, it's working the way you want it to, but also needs to negotiate with other things. Like in basketball, whenever you're dribbling, if you get rubbed up against somebody, like a jostle, right? Like you have to start figuring that out. Okay, well, you know, you might get pops and blends. So you have to add more animations, more coverages, more conditions of like, when should they blend? When do these like blends look better going from this sequence to this sequence? Even combat positioning can be such a big deal, especially like in a game like God of War, where it's like the enemy's supposed to be here, but he's actually way too close to you. So he needs to back up. How do we solve that problem? Does it look good? What are things that we could do to fix that?
Okay. So are you, when you talk about like, sequences and things like that, are you interfacing a lot with like the animation team?
That was my question.
I need a image of a Draugr running backwards so that he can get further away from Kratos.
Yeah, so it's kind of interesting. Like my job is so oddly specific, but I talk to like almost everybody. So I'm talking to the combat designer that's in charge of like the actual combat encounter of a character, right? But at the same time, I'm also working with that animator that's in charge of that character. So I'm negotiating with the combat designer of like, hey, combat positioning is kind of messing up navigation. At the same time, do you want his, you know, this character to be here to do specific moves? So now we have to adjust the navigation for that, right? As well as discussing with the animator, like, hey, I'm noticing like there's a left arm pop, or hey, we need a better animation coverage for these specific stops and stuff like that. So it's just constant negotiation with all that, but also with like programmers, because they're like setting up systems of like, you know, like say, for example, like whenever a character like Kratos goes to climb up a wall, right? They have to run up to that location. And are they playing an enter where like Atreus goes up first potentially, or jumps on your back or something? Like you have to start discussing with programmers, animators, like even level designers, like all these things. It's just like a Pandora's box that you open up as you work.
You know, it's one of the things that everybody that we've talked to for this podcast that, or just in general, that is a designer, that's what everybody says. It's like, you're such a hub around specific things. It's so interesting.
Like, yeah, especially.
Maybe 10 years ago, I didn't understand that. I just thought you were like, you know, designing Mario jumps or something. I don't know what I thought.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting how design positions, especially for a game like, in my opinion, like what Sony Santa Monica does, they get more specific. Whereas like whenever I worked at EA, it was a very just generalist like gameplay designer, and mm-hmm. that was kind of it, right? So it's kind of interesting how roles kind of open up and become more specific based on what you're focused on and stuff. Like tech art wasn't really a thing I want to say, like, I remember like cohort four, it was just starting to become
right.
a thing.
100%. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's interesting how roles just kind of are creating themselves because of just how complex like systems are starting to become. So.
Yeah, I think that's true. I mean, we're definitely seeing a lot of fracturing of, you know, we, at the U, we still think of things in kind of boxes, but the inside of those boxes, there's this gigantic group of things that people can do and specialize in. And even in their, you know, their games, like in Capstone for our undergrads and, you know, their thesis games, people are doing all kinds of stuff. So it's cool.
So I want to take one step back. So you, we talked, you mentioned EA, you talked about like general design and everything like that. Let's go back one step further. What made you want to be a game designer from like the very beginning? How did you know that that was the path that you wanted to go down?
Oh man, I remember playing video games at the age of four going like, I wish I could get paid doing this. That's kind of where it started. And then I was always like interested in how things work, taking things apart, even like seeing things like behind the curtain, so to speak. So even like in my teens, like whenever I was in high school and stuff, I think it was called Worldcraft and QE Radiant for like Quake 3 and Half-Life. I remember like loading up those engines and like those tools and like, how do they work? Like, how did Gordon Freeman trigger this scene? And like, how does all this work? And starting to learn all those things. And I think it just kept snowballing into like doing more and more of that. And until I got to college where I was like, wait, this is actually like a possible path I could go down. Like I thought this was a joke. Cool. I'm in, and just went even deeper on that. So.
Okay. So then Tony, how did your perception of what you thought game design was when you were a kid playing? And then when you started learning more about it and everything, what were the big differences between what you assumed game design was versus what you learned it was?
Oh man. It's way more complicated than I thought it was as a kid, right? As a kid, I would be like, hey, I just want those two enemies over there to spawn and just come after me, right? But in reality, you're like, okay, those two enemies spawn, but what can they do? What do they look like? Narratively, what's the impact of that if it is one? Like, how do they combat with you? How does it work whenever they come towards you? Okay, now you need animations. Now you need textures. It's just like an endless spiral of things that you like start to unravel the more you start doing things. So yeah, I think, you know, as a kid, I thought it was way more easier and simple, whereas like, hey, I have a game idea. Like let's modify the rules of poker. Right. But in reality, it's like, no, there's so much more theory that goes on behind the scenes. Right. So
I think that happens a lot, especially in the world of design more than anywhere else, is that there's a lot of assumptions that there's just like an ideas guy who's just like sitting at a desk, like, hey, we should do this. Now you all go make it to all the minions on the team.
Yeah, I have students all the time that the reason why they think they want to be a designer, I actually spend a whole class period on this, is because they think that means you're in charge. And my experience of the designers, I mean, maybe, you know, creative directors are in charge, but designers tend to, like, it's really important to make friends with everybody and be really in communication and lead maybe, but more guide than ever be in charge.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think creative directors have more of the, you know, I have this idea, like go chase it, right? Whereas for a designer, it's definitely more of a, you're that central hub potentially of something you're in charge of. So like for me, I'm in charge of like movement of enemies, character and stuff like that, right? So whenever somebody has feedback, they'll come to me, but I have to negotiate that with animators, designers, engineers to make sure all of that works and functions right. And I am in charge of those features and working on those things. But at the same time, it's like, I can't be like, hey, you know, walk over to somebody's desk and be like, hey, you know, this should happen. And they'll just be like, no, you're not. Like, go work on your trains. So
I worked at a studio once where the phrase, it would be cool if, and then as soon as someone said that, we like kicked him out of the room. We're like, no, we're not doing that. We're going to talk about this like systematically, and we're going to figure it out. We're not just going to say it would be cool if this, because that's how it snowballs into craziness.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think sometimes I always do the yes and though, and it always ends up being like a cool way of building it up more though. So at least that was what it was like on 404 site, was a whole lot of like, yes, I like that idea. And negotiating that.
Yeah, I have always tried to be not a no because, but a yes if person. And yeah. It's hard though, you know, it's because you really, I mean, sometimes you bite off a lot more than you can chew, but then sometimes you really create awesome things. So
yeah, for sure. I agree.
Yeah. So we were talking before about how you had been at EA. We were talking about generalist designer. What are some of the other things you've kind of described in detail what you're doing now? What are some of the other design tasks that you've had throughout your career as a just a designer or a gameplay designer? Because you were yeah. saying before we were recording how it was kind of a broad umbrella there. So what yeah. were those?
I'm that meme of the guy that says, like, I did all the things. It's kind of what it feels like. So I worked on NBA Live from, I want to say Live 15 up until I think 19 was the last published one. And then I also helped greenlight the college football product that got announced recently, which is super dope. Excited for them. But the things I've done throughout that whole experience, right? So NBA Live 15, I was just an intern. I was doing like localization string. So it was like, hey, the control schemes are like, how do you want to write the description for this achievement? You know, so it wasn't super cool. But at the same time, after a while, they're like, all right, start working on simulations. So whenever I sim a basketball season, you know, hey, the Cavaliers are winning whenever they didn't have like a really good team at the time. Or why is this the best 3-point shooter in the game whenever Steph Curry's around? Like, this doesn't make sense. What's a center doing as the best shooter? So like figuring all that stuff out. And then eventually it turned into, all right, you're going to start working on the create player feature. How do you negotiate face scanning or putting items on? How do you do live services potentially with create player? Player ratings, running a database. I started maintaining like creating teams and stuff, helping them create trailers by doing special builds and setting up specific rosters. What else did I do? Eventually I did full on features where I'm doing UX designs, UI designs, systems, full featured modes. And then eventually they were like, hey, you play a lot, you should do some gameplay. And then for a while I was doing like 50 front end gameplay systems work and then modes work for franchise and stuff like that. And then I started working in terms of gameplay. I did like traits, layups, dunks. And then I worked on player locomotion eventually. And then for the EA College Football is a lot of like hot pie in the sky. Like, what could we potentially do with this project? Like, what are the different ways we could do those things?
So then I want to think of how to phrase this. So how much of your work, either back then or now, how much of it is kind of conceptual design stuff? And how much of it is like in engine or in spreadsheet implementation, actually making the stuff happen that you have designed?
Yeah, good question. So depends on the situation. I think a lot of, for me on gameplay, it was a lot of the systems already kind of exist for the most part, or hey, there's this new technology that's coming in. Let's prototype in game and start figuring those things out. Whereas coming up with like new modes and systems, it was a lot more of, okay, pen on paper, write game design documents, write UX flows, UI flow charts, and like start communicating like 2D art and stuff like that. So I think it depends on the position. Here it's a little mix of both, where a lot of it is having like a vocal discussion with somebody, making some notes, and then actually getting some assets and me prototyping something together.
Hmm. Remind me, what was your bachelor's degree?
Media arts and technology at Michigan State with a specialization in game design development.
Right. And you did, I mean, you had programming part of as a chunk of that, right?
I did not. So during my undergrad, we didn't have a lot of, we had some engineering students and some artists, mm-hmm. but they were like fine art students. So they didn't really understand 3D modeling and stuff. So my whole undergrad, they would try to like make the teams fair, but sometimes it would be, hey, we're lacking like enough engineers to do something, or we're lacking enough animators or 2D artists. And a lot of it was like, I'll figure it out.
That's what I was just going to say, is you came in and you could actually do a lot. I remember that vividly.
Yeah. It was a lot of self-taught. Taking that time to learn. I always went above and beyond like what the class was. Like I remember for the EAE program, there was the producer engineering class. And it was kind of like, all right, the bare minimum is make your own game. But I was like, all right, I'm adding AI, I'm doing this, I'm doing that. You know, I was like, I'm adding like a cool kill cam on this top-down strategy game. So I always try to push the boundary of like, okay, I got the checkbox there, but could I keep going further? So right. That helped a lot.
Well, I mean, that's actually what I remember is every time I ever walked by your desk when you were in the program, you were in engine somehow, you know, you were always working in it, not just burn down charts and things like a normal, like in our production track, you know?
Yeah. I'm more of a designer that's, I'm not as good of a theory crafter kind of designer where it's like in my head, this works out. A lot of it is, all right, I like collaborating and I'll have discussions with people and be like, okay, cool. These are some cool ideas. Now let's go prototype them in engine. I'm more of a, let's get it in game, see how it feels. Cause as a designer, I've played a stupid amount of games. I think my Steam collection is 1500 games or something.
Wow.
So yeah, I play way too much. So I can like sit there and jump back to different games, tell you like this mechanic we're doing has been done before. Here's the good, the bad. And then as we're prototyping it, I'll play it. And I can typically tell you like, okay, this feels good. This doesn't feel good.
I was about to say my Steam library is 1500 games too. I've only played like 20 of them though. So
it's those fails.
I think I played like 1,000 of the 1500. Wow. A lot of them were sales that I had already played. I lived next to a Family Video back in the day whenever I was at Bachelor's. So like I would go rent games for 2-3 days for $2. And I would so I had way too many Xbox 360 games. Like, and I would rent anything. Like World's Deadliest Catch, I played that. Turns out you can get sunk in the game with a Russian submarine if you cross borders, but you live, you learn. So yeah,
that's a lovely Easter egg to know about. That's amazing. You know, I think that that is actually one of the hallmark skills that I see over the years in someone that wants to be a designer is that you play everything. You play all kinds of games because there's always something to learn in a different kind of game. It's like I talk about this in my freshman class that, you know, I have students come in and they only play RPGs or they only play battle royales or they only play FPSs in general and they want to be designers. And I'm like, you know, you got to play more games, not more time, but more games.
Yeah. And I mean, if you think about it, right, like sports games started doing like these story or single player experiences, right? So they started looking at narrative ideas, RPG elements with ratings and stuff. So even if you're focused on like a PUBG, right, they start doing live services. Oh, that's been around in sports forever with Ultimate Team and like all these other things. So everyone is always trying to look at each other and like copying one another, but trying to improve, right? Like Fortnite and PUBG had been around forever. And then Apex Legends was like, what if we added an ability to reboot people? And then Fortnite's like, reboot van, that's a good idea. So everyone, you know, everyone's always looking at each other's designs and trying to say, how can we improve on that? And even basing it off of other genres, because you know, predominantly sports gamers don't really play a lot of RPGs.
Right.
But if you start adding those elements, it starts creating engagement, getting them to come back. So those all add up, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah, I knew that cross-genre knowledge was going to be just grow and grow and grow as soon as I found out that they were doing like quests in Guitar Hero.
I'm like, yeah.
Okay.
I vividly remember in God of War 3 when there is a straight up rhythm mechanic like halfway through the game, like these things start flat, like columns start rotating and you are playing Guitar Hero in the middle of God of War.
Anything's possible. That's what I've learned in the video game world.
So this is kind of a silly question, but can you enjoy games that you're playing now? Or like, are you always finding yourself analyzing like, oh, this is how that character moves? Or
yeah,
do you have the ability to just turn off and enjoy a game, or are you too entrenched?
It's a good question. So whenever I'm not playing competitive games, my brain, like my designer brain, can flip off and I'm having a great time. Mm-hmm. But the moment something starts to go wrong and it starts nagging at me, I'm like, okay, like you could fix this. Like, how did you not see this? Like, I understand it could have been shipped, or you got to patch this. And then, but whenever competitive games involve, like I used to play Counter-Strike competitively back in the day, like in tournaments. So I'll play a game like Valorant and something weird happens. And I'm just like, come on, like that's been around forever. Like, you have to fix this. And I'm just like, the inner rage of the designer hat is on in full force. But on the outside, I'm like, all right, whatever, next round. So I think it depends on the game. If I get caught in a really good experience or really good flow, like if I'm playing the game and I just get lost in it, like I forget that I work on video games because I'm just engrossed in it so much.
I think that means that that's a successful game.
Yeah, usually.
That's really, really cool. You talked about collaboration with everybody. What kind of meetings do you go to, and how often, how much time are you spending in meetings versus actually at your desk doing the work that you've been talking about for hours?
Yeah. So here it's, I'm like, I started here about 6-7 months ago. So it's still, my meeting calendar is mad light, which is, I love it because
lucky
I get to
you.
I get to do all the things. But most of the meetings I typically have will be with things like, you know, leads or actual animators, and they'll kind of review an enemy or review a character and be like, okay, how does this look visually? Like narratively, does it appeal? Like, okay, this is what's happening here. And then they'll kind of like reiterate and have feedback on that. Stand-ups as well. Like it's very, lots of stand-ups, writing what you do at the beginning of the day, end of the day. At EA, I had a whole lot of meetings. It was a lot of like, but I wasn't working from home at the time. That was before all this craziness happened. So it was a lot of walking into meetings and just having discussions about like, okay, what are we planning for this upcoming sprint? Some meetings will be like, hey, here's some issues we were finding, some bugs. How are our quality targets? Like, is this feature going to work out? And like having all those discussions. So.
Yeah, I would often find myself in so many meetings that I was like, okay, I've now talked about all this stuff and now I have no time to actually do the work that I've been talking about this whole time.
Yeah, my biggest problem was everybody always tries to institute this no meeting thing, like no meeting day. So it's like no meeting Wednesdays. And I'm like, that really means this is where all the important meetings happen because it's the only free time people have. So like my, I remember like getting like an invite where it's like, you will never have to go to a Wednesday meeting ever again. And it like blocks out your calendar, but then I'll see like product managers like booking me for Wednesdays. And I'm just like, oh, come on, man, I just want to, let me work.
I know how that feels. It's like, I have like, you're in so many meetings in the day and that you have to go home and work at night. I hate that. You know, it's like, you know, we talk about how the game industry is so like focused on crunch. I don't think it's just the game industry. That's my dog. Sorry.
I agree with you. And sometimes task lists just go, it feels like they go on forever, right? Yeah. And the one downside with anything you do in game development is every time you open a door, there could be another door behind it, right? So it's just like, you could get a task and you'll just be like, oh, it'll take me 30 minutes to put in. And then like after 30 minutes, you're like, this is going to be a 2-day situation. We're trying to figure this out. It's really hard to give proper estimates. And I think that's why you always see like ship dates kind of slip or crunch end up happening.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think really hard. This is a creative product, right?
Do you think that that's the most difficult part of design, is like estimating how long, in your experience, estimating how long something, or is there something that you dread doing?
Doing the estimates and stuff have never been a big deal. Usually for designers, they're kind of like, whatever, like you're good. They don't really like, you know, in my experiences anyway. Whereas animators and artists and engineers, they're very like focused on like, make sure you put in your estimates, update your estimates, right?
You said that would take 8 hours and it's 9 hours. What are you doing?
I mean, that could happen. I'm not an engineer. I've never been in those conversations, but you never know.
I've been in those conversations before. They're not great.
Whenever I was first starting in the industry, it was kind of like, designer time is free. And then like later on, they started figuring out like, that's not actually the case. So, there's still like this concept of preparing the sprint and being like, here's your tasks. But if you get extra time, you could start working on other things. At least in my experience here, it's been very more relaxed about those things. Like, here are your tasks, go do them. I've never had to like work late so far, fingers crossed. but at EA, they also kind of started doing a better job of that from a production standpoint. So.
Yeah, I think it just depends on the studio. Oh. Sorry, Adam.
No, I was going to say, I think it's an industry we're getting better, like collectively speaking, we're a lot better now than we were 15 years ago. I know that it hasn't gone away completely yet, and maybe that's the dream for one day. But I do think we're getting better, like as a whole, of either keeping realistic deadlines or not being afraid to push deadlines if something isn't quite to the level that we want it to be.
It feels like to me that the industry, I mean, Tony, you probably can tell me if this is true or not, but, you know, we have had a number of people every single year go into production. And it seems like that they are getting jobs a little bit more quickly now than they did when we first started. Like, so the industry is actually hiring more, but a big variety of jobs that a producer does, but they are like, they're better trained, or they're, I don't know, they're just getting jobs.
Yeah, I think it, you know, producers typically act as more or less the managers for like the people they work under, right? Or mm-hmm. that work under them. So it's a lot of, you need, if you're managing too many people, you're not going to be an effective producer. So right. I think there's a lot of people working like as a group or in tandem with other producers and trying to manage a group of people. And like, to your point, I think that's a mix of being able to avoid that huge crunch problem, or at least trying to avoid it, right? Right. There's still right. that unknown variable where it kind of makes it inevitable the moment you put a release date on. But they're trying to throw enough data at it, you'll start to figure things out. So they're trying to do that.
Yeah.
As well as trying to just make sure they're managing the people from a expectations, where do they want to go from a career standpoint, trying to help put people that want to become better and to that position to succeed. So yeah. I do think producers are starting to become more and more beloved and wanted for sure.
Well, and I think we just have like people with a lot more skills that are coming into the, you know, even just basic, like just out of school, like, you know, cause that's my view of it, but they're, you know, they tend to just have had more experience. So they know, they, you know, at least at the very minimum, they know all the words to say, and they understand what has to happen, you know. At least that's, as you know, that's the way we designed our program, is we wanted everybody to understand all the facets of it. And you might be focused on one thing in school, but when you get out of school, you know, hopefully the world is your oyster. I don't know if a concept artist would want to be an engineer, but that could happen, right? If you wanted it mm-hmm. to be.
Yeah. And I think to your point, like producers and designers, especially with the EAE program, I think really worked out, because you have to be able to have those discussions and understand like, I'll go up to a producer and I'll just be like, hey, you know, this weird thing is happening and I think we need an engineer. And they're like, okay, I know exactly what engineer we should speak with, or what we should also bring in an animator to see what those impacts are. So being able to communicate and understand all the different languages outside of just producer, like you got to be able to talk designer, you got to be able to talk engineer, you got to be able to talk artist, animator.
Absolutely. So, yeah, absolutely. Well, that brings up the next question I had for you, which is, is there a skill set, like, is there something that you wish you had when you got out of school, or that you had spent more time working on? I feel like you're kind of a unique person, because you always sort of like, if I need to figure out how to do this, I'm just going to figure out how to do this. But I'm curious, you know, like, what do you think the basic skill set is for a designer? And then what do you wish that you would spent more time on before you got into the industry?
Yeah, so that's a good one.
Is that a hard question? Sorry.
Yeah, all the things. No. From a skill set, I think EAE kind of did a good job of that, right? They help you check those boxes. But I think the other thing that people need to keep in mind is like, go deeper, go beyond. Like, you know, you might go into an animation class and they're like, just bounce the ball. And you're like, all right, whatever, good enough. Like, I just did it. But really, like, I remember at one point I sat down with Kyle and I was like, hey, Kyle, like, I want to bounce this ball, but I want to make it look good. And he was mm-hmm. like, oh, well, you got to, you know, follow these animation principles. And I'm like going down that rabbit hole, and he's showing me like, oh, you got to make it squish. You got to make it actually go higher than it normally would. You have to sell that motion. And I was like, I didn't even think about this. So like, you know, going that extra mile, like, does wonders, right?
If you're learning that from somebody like Kyle, who's a really, really good animator.
Yeah, C4, like everyone on 404 site was kind of a big deal for me. Yep. So I was like, everybody was awesome. So it was, I loved being able to like turn around and be like, you know, hey, Rachel, how does the UX work? Like, you know, whenever she was working on the colorblind deficiency stuff, I was like, oh man, that's actually like fascinating. And I didn't even think about that possibility. And the fact that she was jumping on that, like, gave me the opportunity to learn and like understand those things. Yep. Right. So yeah, I wish in the long run, I wish I understood the technical side of things a little bit more. I wish I was a little bit of a better artistic brain about it as well. But yeah, I think the EAE program does a really good job of helping you cover those bases as a designer. But yeah, I definitely think going above and beyond just what the class requirement is helps you go that step further.
I think that's good advice.
taking that one step further, you had mentioned you've been at Santa Monica for about 6 or 7 months now. So you at least very recently were in the job market. Mm-hmm. How did your portfolio look? How did your resume look? Like, what kind of skills were you putting forward as a designer, and how were you showing off what you had done? Was it gameplay videos? Was it a whole lot of like, here's all my documents, here's 100 pages of Google Docs, go for it?
Yeah, it's funny because so whenever I did it, I can't remember who I asked. I think I asked a couple of people from C4. I think Joe also helped me out a lot. Joe mm-hmm. Rozek. He's an awesome guy, by the way, just a monster in the world. but he helped me with my resume, where I was like, put your games up top. Like, anything you've shipped or worked on, like, let them kind of see that at the top, where it's like, hey, you've worked on a sports title, or you've worked on this project and what you've kind of done to that. And then also kind of getting to those skills, right? Like, if you're sending a resume, typically, like, the last thing they check is making sure you went to a college, right? It's like, do you have the skills that fit the job requirement? So I my resume didn't really like change too much. I think I would tailor it and reword things based on, like, if I'm applying for a locomotion position, I would make things and reword it a little bit, so it's more tailored towards locomotion, as opposed towards, like, if I was applying to Riot to do something console related, like, this is more systems and console oriented. And it wasn't like a massive like overhaul, here's a whole new resume, but it was like, let me change a few words, let me add a bigger emphasis on this section that I think fits, you know, the bill of what they're looking for. And then for a portfolio, I feel like recruiters, they get so many that they just can't spend time looking at deep videos. So my portfolio was bulleted list of like, here are some contributions I did to this particular project. Was really quick, succinct, right to the point. And I think I had like a gameplay trailer at the top of it. And I even had one recruiter like, yo, I really appreciate the fact you did that, because I think somebody was like, they sent them like a 15-minute level design video where it was like, here's my walkthrough, and they're like doing a narrative over it with no like supplementary text or anything like that. And they're like, we don't have 15 minutes to look at your like portfolio piece. So
I usually recommend to students, if you do have a lot to say, and it's usually the designers who have a lot to say, mm-hmm. I usually recommend like, give the like TLDR at the top.
Yeah.
And then give the like, do you want to know more? You can click here and you can watch my hour long gameplay playthrough and everything like that. But at least give them something that they can give the very quick glance of what you've done and where your skill sets are, without having to like shovel through just a ton of text and a ton of videos and everything like that.
Yeah, for sure. Like, you want it to be quick to the point, because a recruiter is going to spend maybe like a couple of minutes looking at your stuff. As me as an interviewer, like as a designer, when I was interviewing people at EA, I would go that layer deeper. I remember at one point I downloaded some dude's prototype or something that he had made and like played through it and kind of got an idea. Or I would watch like a video. So those do help. But yeah, to your point, like, you're going to want that TLDR, because there's been many times where I remember I told you about like, I had a horrific first ever interview in the game industry that was like a 6-month process, canceled flights. It was a disaster. And I remember everybody was out to lunch, so they had to grab different designers to interview me. And they literally like grabbed like an iPad, loaded up my website, and was trying to read my resume while they're interviewing me. So like, sometimes you gotta like make sure you have like the TLDR version for sure.
Absolutely. And also, yeah, that I empathize with you. You always have that one interview that just happens and you're just like, well, I'm never interviewing again, because that was me. If this is what the future holds, then I'm done. I don't want to do this anymore.
You know, yeah, that was a nightmare.
And that happens all through your career too. Like, you never have any idea that it's like, interviewing is hard. Nobody has practice at it, you know?
Yeah, for sure. And even design tests like can be such a nightmare, where it's like, oh, why are you making me do this? Like, at least give me feedback. Sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. So yeah, it's interviewing is always, I don't know, I'm always sweating bullets. And sometimes the interviews like will be like, hey, we're here to help you, like encourage you to succeed, let's just check the boxes. I've also been like in a 6-hour like remote interview with no breaks, and it was just them grilling me. They're like, do you know anything about combat? And I'm like, no. And they're like, great, let's start asking you about how you would do combat. And I'm just like, I just said no. But after that whole interview, they were like, oh, we just did that to see like how you would react in an uncomfortable position. You actually handle it pretty well. So let's actually talk about like what you would actually do and see what your knowledge is on that. And I was just like, I did not have fun with that experience.
And I don't know if I want to work for a company that yanks your chain like that. Yuck.
Yeah, it was terrible. I think by the end of the call, I was just like sweating bullets. I was like so worried. And I was like, I felt like I did, like, I was like, did I apply to the wrong position? Like what, what happened? But sometimes they switch it up on you. So.
Well, so you're now at Santa Monica. You're working on presumably one of the biggest, well-known video games in the world.
They might be making something new. We don't know.
That's why I said presumably. So, I mean, that it's kind of high profile, right? Like that's almost as high profile as you can get, especially being at least relatively early in your career, like you still are. Is imposter syndrome a thing? Do you look around and go like, what is going on here?
Every day.
So how do you overcome it? Because I mean, that is a loaded question. I'm the king of loaded questions, but if someone who is as talented and as confident as you can feel that, then it can happen to anybody. So my follow-up question is, how do you overcome that? How do you cope with that? Is it just like I'm just going to keep faking it until I make it sort of thing? Or do you have any like tried and true methods of being able to display that confidence in yourself?
It's tough because I'm like, I'm one of those people that like, I'm really hard on myself. And I am like the walking imposter syndrome, like for myself mentally, like even whenever I like, whenever I got accepted to EA, I'm like, why would they accept me? And like, even whenever I like got to EA, I was like, what is this? And then like, whenever I got the offer from like, hey, do you want to work, you know, at Sony Santa Monica? I was like, is this from a real email? Is this spam? Like, I don't, you know? And even working here, it's funny you say early in the career, whenever I think one of the combat leads is actually a year younger than me. So I was like, oh no, now I feel really old.
Oh, no.
So yeah, it was one of those moments where I'm like, oh man, like how have I been doing? I don't know if I have any tried and true method. Like it still hits from time to time, but I also like sometimes try to sit back and reflect like, hey, you're here. Like, you know, obviously they believe in you if they've hired you, right? You're in that position because they know you'll succeed. And I think it helps whenever you're surrounded by people that, you know, they compliment you or they encourage you to do great things. And I try to do that with other people too. Like if I'm talking to an animator, I'm like, yo, your animations that I just got, they look amazing. Like, this is awesome. You know, let's keep it up, right? It's we're all in this together is kind of like the mentality I try to do. So yeah, it's really tough because sometimes they'll do like, you know, a sync up and they'll be like, check out all this cool new combat stuff. And I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And they're like, so what do you have? I'm like, check out this player moving. I'm just like, oh, this is not as cool. Like, yeah.
You knew. Since you were little that you wanted to do this, you know?
Yeah.
I feel like I remember us having a conversation about that. Like you just, you know, if I can't do this, I don't know what else I would do. And I think that's why you worked so hard is because you were afraid that it wasn't a real thing, but you have made it so real. And I'm so happy for you and so proud of you.
Yeah, thank you. And my skepticism about getting in the industry has helped a lot because even as a kid, I was like, it's going to be impossible. Like everyone's going to want to have this job. So I always like try to go and go deeper and do that extra effort. And, you know, while that may have like led to me like almost like crunching in school a little bit, I remember you yelling at me a lot because I would always be in the lab late or early. But it
always
did.
Always there.
Yeah. So it was, you know, in hindsight, like it ended up working out for me. So I can't complain too much, but
well,
I don't think
you know that though, because like you almost killed yourself. Like you were.
Yeah. I do agree with you. I don't think crunches, that should not be a thing. It sucks. It's the worst. And I remember reading this like article where like, I think it was in Japan, they started doing like 4-day work days and like letting people have off. Because I think after a certain number of hours you've worked, you just start being worse.
Yes, Microsoft did a study.
Oh, maybe it was Microsoft that did that. So Yeah, I definitely think like after you've crunched for a while, and I've done like heavy crunch loads before, where like I said, it was whenever I was my final semester, I was a full-time grad student and also working on NBA Live. And it was like during alpha. So I would work, I think I got up at like 9:30 a.m. or 9 a.m. to go to work. And I would be there until like 10, 11 at night. Then I would come home and work on like my thesis project till like 3 a.m. Then 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. I would work on like all the other classes, like narrative, 3D modeling and stuff. And then I would go to sleep for 3 hours. And I did that for, I want to say 3 or 4 months.
I think straight. You did it for 4 months and I was concerned.
I'm surprised yeah. You're still here. Like, congratulations on not dying during that.
Yeah, it was a blur. And
I also think it was a close thing. I mean, you looked really tired all the time.
Yeah, I was tired. My mind was like melted. It was
you can't actually be doing good work, you know. We have students right now that are working full time and are in school full time. And I see that look. It's like you're not doing your best work right now.
Yeah. And it also sucks because you're just, you know, it like at the same time, right? You're like, I have to finish these tasks, but I know it's not going to be up to that quality bar.
And I want to graduate because it's expensive and I want to get done and I can't, and I don't want to say no to this job. And it's a juggle. God, I know, you know?
Yeah. I think it's avoidable. If you like,
maybe,
but you run into those, some, you put yourself into those scenarios that make it unavoidable, right? Like if I was more efficient with how I manage my time, or I negotiated potentially with you and the faculty or with my manager, right? I have this mentality where I put things all on myself and I just try to like dig in and do it. And I think that's what leads to a lot of situations with crunch where it's like, yeah, we could get that done. And then there's this unknown variable called making video games that come into play and everything starts on fire. So.
And that you don't actually have a full 24 hours all day to work on something because sleep is important.
Sleep's overrated sometimes. But.
So I've been thinking for the past little bit, I want to ask this question and there's no way to not make it a completely loaded question. and I feel bad because I'm trying to do better at that. And I'm not trying to disparage anyone or anything. Do you find that, or maybe I'll say, do you have any experiences with, I found in my life working around people who are passionate about what they do often encourages me to do better, even if it's not in like a crunching way. Because sometimes when you're crunching, it's like, hey, we're all going to crunch to at least, you know, misery loves company. But I found that there's a degree of like, if I am working around animators and I know those animators are putting their heart and soul into it, that actually makes me want to perform better in the stuff that I'm doing because I want to be able to be like, I want my stuff to be as good or as reflective of the final product as theirs is. Do you find that in where you're working now? I imagine most people working on at Santa Monica are probably really jonesed to be there and really excited about it.
The people we've met that are at that studio really like it.
all the people who come and talk to us. But yeah. Do you find that there's like an unspoken degree of everyone boosting each other up as far as, you know, let's make an awesome game, let's make a game of the year game?
Yeah, I mean, I even at NBA Live, whenever we didn't really sell like amazing, we didn't have the best Metacritic, we still had that mentality of like we're all. I feel like there's this just like I don't know what you would coin the term, but like being together, right? Like having that group. Everyone is always trying to push themselves. And I, you know, as a designer and even as a producer, I would be like, I'm the kind of person where I try to push that passion and I'm trying to like show I'm passionate about things. Like even if somebody like looks bummed or isn't really like jonesed about the project or something, I still try to, you know, appeal to their interests, get them to like be a little bit happier, you know, try to like talk them up a little bit. And also just encourage them. I think everyone is, you know, always super ecstatic about what they work on. Cause at the end of the day, like it's kind of like a dream job, you know, at least to me it is. Right. So it's something that, you know, by proxy, I'm just going to inherently be passionate about it. And I do think I agree with you where like, if I'm working along somebody that's just like putting in amazing work, it just makes me want to work harder. So like during those combat meetings and I see all these cool, like things happening and they're like, oh, what do you got? And like, yeah, my guy moves, but I'm going to make that look really good. Don't just you wait.
Just hold that thought.
that was a perfect answer to a terrible question. So I thank you very, very much.
Yeah, no problem. Well,
I just think that, I mean, knowing that the group of people that you did your thesis project with, you guys were a team. And I think you really understand what a benefit a really solid team. And you guys, I mean, you had complicated things that happened on your team. But
yeah, like the project getting completely scrapped and the faculty was mad at me. So I remember that.
I wasn't faculty then.
So. Yeah. Four of Foresight was that whole pre-production was just a total mess. I don't know if I should go down that rabbit hole. But yeah, working alongside a passionate team, I remember just sitting there like, at one point we had somebody that was in the industry came by and played the game and just like destroyed us. And I was like, oh man, he's like, I was upset. And I was like, I hate that guy. But at the same time, I was like, he's so right. Yeah. So like, you know, it was one of those, like, you destroyed my passion, but I'm reinvigorated and fired up again. And we ended up like, I think it ended up being a pretty successful game. Like it worked out really well.
It's
so
amazing. And, you know, I think practicing your resilience and having some grit is good practice for the game industry.
Yeah, there's a lot of like situations where you're really passionate about something and might get destroyed, right? Or being able to take constructive criticism is sometimes really hard to take, but yeah, it's never easy whenever somebody's like playing something and they're like, this is the worst thing ever, right? As somebody that, like, you know, you're not supposed to read the comments of YouTube videos that you make and stuff, I totally go into Twitch channels of games I work on, and it's not a good idea.
Don't do that.
But the, you know, as a designer, you have to be able to, like, even though they're like, I absolutely hate this game, they're still playing it. So there's something there that's encouraging them, right? So trying to figure out, like, and half, like 95% of the time, I love making up random statistics. 95% of the time, they'll be like, this sucks and this is why, but that might not actually be the reason why it sucks,
right?
So
they,
like,
don't know. Yeah, they don't understand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So even whenever they're like berating the game or like destroying you, you're still gonna, like, I have to listen, because I'm like, I want to understand where you're coming from, what you could potentially see as a problem, and think of those solutions. Yeah. So having that mentality helps a lot.
Yeah, I just think the internet's mean. Just, it's, we're in this place where everybody kind of thinks, because they've seen 55 extra credits videos, that they understand how it all works and that they can, you know, but come to school, figure it out.
Yeah, anonymity is a heck of a thing. Yeah. the moment they're like, I can't be traced, I have unlimited power, it's like, come on, man.
Yeah. Gosh, we're almost out of time. I can't believe it. This just goes by so fast. It's crazy. But it's time for rapid fire questions.
What is the first game that you ever remember playing?
Oh man, I have like four of them: RBI Baseball, Tecmo Bowl, MechWarrior 2, and Doom. All four of those kind of blend together.
When you were four, you were playing Doom.
Listen, my dad was really cool. I would watch him play, and then after, I think by the time I got to like age 6 or 7, I started. He was like, okay, like, you understand violence, you understand it's not a good thing, like, you know, you give me a stern talking to of, like, you know, you're not gonna fight demons in real life, don't be stupid. so yeah, once you get that, like, talking to, then you're like, okay, now we're cool.
Well, and Doom is pretty stylized anyway, so it's kind of like, we're really upset about a bunch of pixels right now.
Yeah, well, I mean, back in the day, right, like, those pixels were real.
Well, the green blood from Mortal Kombat was really, you know, important for people.
Oh, yeah.
Get me on my soapbox about that.
What's the first console that you owned? Or maybe even the first console you bought with your own money?
As oh, man. With a PlayStation 5 behind him.
Yeah,
jealous so about.
No, you didn't buy that one. We talked about that.
I know.
Yeah. So the first console I ever owned was, I want to say it was an NES, but my dad stole it to play RBI Baseball. So I ended up getting a Sega Genesis. Mm. So I missed out on the Zeldas, the Marios, the Metroids. I was busy playing Sonic, Bugsby 3D and Tony La Russa's baseball. So that was my childhood.
You know, one of my all-time favorite games was on the Genesis, Road Rash. What?
Oh, Road Rash was so good.
They actually wore that game
at Redwood Shores. They actually have one of the Road Rash bicycle, like motorbikes. It had been crashed during a photo shoot, so they bought it and like put it in the office. Oh, super cool.
Oh my gosh. I'm gonna go visit.
Yeah, first one I ever bought was probably my Xbox One. Whenever I was at Utah, I was like, oh, I really want an Xbox. So I went and bought it. So that's what I did.
That's what our student loans are for.
Yeah.
Important. You're going to
don't tell the government.
No, it's like a $300 math book, right? You know,
it's fine. Yeah, it's research.
Also, I'm going to have to throw down, we're talking about Road Rash. I was a Skitchin guy myself. Mm-mm. With the rollerblades and hooking onto the back of the cars. Oh, yeah.
The rebel.
So what's your favorite game, Tony?
Oh, man. It's,
or one of your favorites.
Oh, man. Okay, so Deus Ex is probably my favorite. I have, like, all the comic books actually right here.
Oh, interesting. So, I would not have guessed that.
Yeah, anything sci-fi. So I love Cyberpunk, even though it got terrible reviews. I have the, like, world book and all this stuff. Neocron is a German MMO I really loved for a long time that no one probably has ever heard of, but it did so many interesting and cool things that to this day I still am like, no one's done this yet. They need to copy them.
Was it in German?
No, it was it had an English translation, but it had such a low user base, I guess. But it was a really well done MMO FPS.
Man, it would have maybe really helped me when I was in school learning German.
Yeah.
I knew that was a long time ago.
What is a game from the past that you wish you could have worked on?
God of War 2018. It's funny because I said that before we even started this interview. I was like, I remember playing that in 2018 going like, I wish I could work on that game. Those jerks. Deus Ex would have also have been one of those, even like the more recent ones. Like I would have loved working on Mankind Divided or Human Revolution. I think that would have been a fun project to like toy with, and being able to be like at the forefront. Like Deus Ex was so ahead of its time, it would have been cool to like pen my name on that. Like, yeah, I did that.
Cool. That's cool.
Who's your favorite Pokemon?
Oh, what? I wasn't ready for this. Favorite Pokemon.
You got to keep people on their toes, man.
Charizard. I always rock the fire Pokemon, and I love Charizard's attitude on the TV show where he's like, I don't care about anybody. I'm gonna do me.
I was having a big conversation with my friend the other day, speaking of fire types, about like, why do Growlithe and Arcanine not get enough love? They are like tiger fire puppies. Like, what is not to love
you are so
about
right.
them, right? Like, they go so under the radar, and they are so incredible.
Yeah, my second favorite Pokemon would be Snorlax, just because I wish I could sleep as much as Snorlax could.
Oh, yeah. Okay, so you're given control of a studio, and they give you carte blanche. What game do you make, or what type of game do you make?
Oh, so I'm all in on action RPGs, even first-person RPGs. Like, I feel like there's so much, even though it's such it's so saturated right now, there's still so much potential there with, like, toying around with narrative, toying around with like how do users tell stories, especially with like how GTA RP is such a big thing. It would be even cool to make like some kind of multiplayer equivalent of an action RPG where people could kind of like role play and do their thing, but also like have a really deep system. If I had $1 billion, sure.
So what are you playing right now?
Oh,
not
so,
right now you're talking to us. But what
are you playing right now? Yeah, that's after this meeting instead of work.
Right.
Valheim. I've actually been playing.
Oh, I have had a lot of students talk about that.
Yeah, for some reason, it's really, really like, I usually don't like those kinds of games. Like Minecraft, I was like, I get it. I'm not a big fan. But for some reason, Valheim just like, it clicked in my head. That and Astroneer are like the two games that are open world that just work. Mm-hmm. And I love having like yelling at my friend about like, oh, you're building this all wrong. And then like, like one day I was like playing it and I like built my side and it was like a 2-story square building. And then his side was just a 45 degree angle, like traditional. And it was like all connected. So it just looked like it was like a TV show where we're doing our own thing, but it looks so stupid. But that and Valorant is another one that's like, I've been playing a lot of, so.
Yeah, all the V games. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah, V for Vendetta.
Valhalla.
Yeah, Valhalla was a really good one. So.
I'm in the middle of that. It got kind of dark, so I have to do it a little bit at a time. I'm not a binger. Like, I don't binge watch it because I need to think about what's happening.
Yeah, that's like an 80-hour, 60-hour game just story. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, I had finished Odyssey. My pandemic summer was Odyssey, so...
Yeah, is that the one that had the Final Fantasy character in it?
No.
Or is it Origin? There was an Assassin's Creed side mission where like a Final Fantasy Guardian Force shows up. I'm just like, what am I playing right now?
Wow.
I think it was like an Easter egg at the time.
Oh, yeah. No, it must be an Origin because I have done everything I possibly could do in Odyssey now.
Okay, it must be an Origin.
Yeah, so...
And the last question that we like to end on, do you have any advice for either someone thinking about starting their career in games, or perhaps advice that you would have given Tony a number of years ago, if you could sit yourself down and be like, all right, bro, listen here.
If we have another 25 minutes.
You have 25 seconds. How about
you take as much time as you need.
Yeah, I definitely think learning a little bit of everything is so critical. Like learning a little bit, like understanding how logic works to program was huge, especially with how, you know, Blueprint is a thing, or Unreal Kismet, where it's all visual scripting, Unity starting to support it. I also wish, like as a kid, I had the ease of access into like Unreal Engine and Unity. Yeah. that everyone does. I think you can get Maya for free now as a student.
Yep.
Used to like have to beg people for money for it or obtain it in other ways, which is, yeah. So like a lot of, we don't talk about that. But it was a lot of that, like a lot of just trying to think more critically about those things. I think another thing I always try to tell people is there was this one conversation I had with a friend and he was like, yeah, where did you apply? I'm like, oh, everywhere. I sent out like 300 resumes for my undergrad. Like I was just everywhere that like would listen, had an email, I was like throwing it out there. And I had one friend that was like, yeah, I think I'm just going to apply to Blizzard. And I'm like, just Blizzard? And he goes, yeah. Oh, you know what? Maybe Valve too. And I'm like, no, you gotta aim a little bit. You gotta aim around, right? Like it would be cool to work at like Valve, right? Or Sony Santa Monica. But sometimes you gotta work your way up to those points. And you gotta start somewhere. So try not to be so picky about what you want to, where you will end up as opposed to where you want to end up.
Especially at the beginning, right? Because you may end up somewhere where you're still learning skills and still expanding that skill set and expanding that network as well.
Yeah. And that's another thing is building, like collaborating and having those friendships, like, you know, working alongside, you know, Kyle, Joe, Siddharth, Tina, like there's so many cool people that was back on cohort 4 that I still talk to even in my group. And like I said, I wouldn't have made it into Utah if it wasn't for talking to AJ. One of my professors at Michigan State was good friends with Roger. I think his name was Casey McDonald or something. Mm-hmm. I think it was. O'Donnell. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh, he's gonna kill me. You know, it's all about. It's like degrees of separation from Kevin Bacon. It's the same thing about the game industry. It's crazy because working as a locomotion designer, like one of the first interviews I had was with a guy, and he goes, "So you worked on NBA Live, huh?" And I was like, "Yeah." He's like, "I worked on that 6 years ago, and I left to work here." And he's like, "We're gonna be working together a lot." So it was like, wow, the fact that you worked on like NBA Live 2 and you ended up here is like, it's super interesting, right? Knowing everyone and like collaborating and communicating, even with people, like everyone is just super critical and important. And it could help you get a job. It could get you that, you know, give you that edge over another potential candidate.
Yep.
100%.
100% agree. I think it, you know, we always say, we can teach all the skills, but you just can't be a jerk because that's going to follow you.
Yeah. And there was this quote I heard from a philosopher, I think it was, and it said, luck is when preparation meets opportunity. And I 100% agree with that. I was like, it does require some luck getting into the situation of getting that phone interview, but you need to be prepared and understand like the moment, like I had the strong belief of like, if I could just get an interview, I will get that job. So like whenever I had that internship call, I was like, I knew I'm going to nail it. Like, I just need to get that call. So I got lucky with, you know, faculty and students, like speaking to the producer and like calling me. And he was like, dude, like they got your resume to my desk, but the moment we got on call, the first thing you said was, I think the first question was like, who's going to make it and win it all in the NBA finals? And the way I answered, he was like, we knew we had to hire you. Like literally the first question in. And it was like, okay, yeah, I knew I was going to nail it. So one time I didn't have imposter syndrome.
Well, you were meant for that job right out of school. I mean, it was such a great connection. And that's the fun part about this job, is because we get to see you guys, you know, get what you think your dream job is, and then you grow, you continue to grow, you know. It's like there's so much anxiety and tension about your thesis project, and we've got to publish this, and we've got to do all this stuff, and I'm like, this is the beginning. Remember, yeah. It's the beginning. So
yeah, and I still talk to a lot of people, like, you know, after my internship, my producer was like, hey, we can't convert you now, but I promise you, like, you're such a cool dude, you're really good at what you do, we'll call you the moment a position opens up. And like a couple of months later, he's like, hey, first name on my list, right? But and I still have this sticker of Retro Yeti like on my desk behind me, so I still yeah, I still hit up people from time to time, and I keep in touch with a lot of people, and anyone who I haven't spoken with that's listening to this, you can always hit me up too. Like, I would love to chat and catch up. So
well, we have in an intention of bringing some people back in our second season. I don't even know how many episodes we're going to have in the first season. We haven't really figured that out, but we're going to have people come back and play their thesis games.
Oh, wow. Oh, that would be really fun. Just mm-hmm. playing through 404 Foresight, and even just talking about like the pre-production nightmare of that game and how it was actually four different games.
Yeah, it took a while. It's okay.
It was worth it. It got there.
Yeah, it really did. It really, really did. Oh,
yeah, that would be awesome.
So great to see you.
It was good seeing you too. It was, I loved catching up with you. So I hope we can keep in touch.
For sure. I mean, you need to not be in Florida. That would help. So
yeah, I'm moving to California.
Florida, working for a California company.
Yeah, that's the one thing I don't like, is working 12 to 9 p.m. every day. But yeah. Well, they're really cool. They're like, hey, you don't have to do that. And I'm like, well, as a designer, I feel like I have to talk to everybody. So mm-hmm. I want to be during core hours.
Yeah.
There is a I feel so bad for him. He lives in England. So he's going to bed around the time I wake up.
So we have students who, because of all of the immigration stuff, they're in China. And so they call into class at midnight.
Yeah, that's rough.
I don't know how they do it. I mean, I'm barely awake at 9 a.m., you know?
Yeah, I'm more of a night bird. So I think I would love that as opposed to... Yeah. Yeah, I remember having a phone interview with a studio in England, and I had to get up at like 7 a.m. for it. And it was like a 6-hour interview. And I was like, oh, I'm so tired.
That'll kill you.
Yeah.
Well, it is so great to see you. So, so great.
Thank you so much, Tony. Thanks. This was absolutely fantastic.
Thanks.
No problem. It was fun. I had a good time. And hopefully I can be on for season 2 whenever you guys get renewed. So.
Right up.
Okay. Can we leave it on that? And we'll be like, find out next time on Building 76.
That's right. Bye, everybody.
See ya.
Bye.